Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Delighted to welcome Dean McGuinness, Deirdre Mullumby and Serena Bellissimo to studio for Movies and Booze. Lovely to see you all.
Hello.
I don't know where to begin now. I'm so excited about all the things you're about to tell me. The news of show business is off the clock, the IP stuff. The films sound great, more brilliant films. But I'm going to go with you, Dean, if that's all right.
There's a bias there, I'm detecting.
The weekend, that's it. You know? What are we drinking, Dean?
We have Polish beers. So in Europe, the largest producers of beer are Germany, number one, England, number two, and Poland, number three.
Really?
Yep. And they've made the numbers really easy because they realise that the people that need to keep track of the numbers are people that drink beer. So it's just over 100 million for the Germans, just under 50 million for the English, and just over a third, 36 million hectolitres for the Polish. So we have two beers from Poland, and both of them are lagers. One is called Zuber, which is the most popular beer in Poland. It's a six.
Zuber,
which is the Polish word for bison. So there's a big bison on the label, and it's a kind of a slightly stronger lager. It's respectable for compared to some of the ones that I bring. It's a 6% ABV lager, which is about 50% stronger than your average Irish lager. And the second beer that we're tasting is called Lech. It's a premium German Helles-style lager.
Beautiful. And I said, they look gorgeous already. I'm going to delay having one for a minute. that's all right.
Otherwise, we could just end up drinking all day.
Could forget to talk about anything else. And in the world of films, it's not a remake, but it's kind of films we know. Well, one in particular we know already, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's The Naked Gun. I'm really excited to talk about this this week. Liam Neeson is taking over the franchise now, playing Lieutenant Frank Drebin Jr. So he's actually the son of the detective sergeant Frank Drebin, who was originally played by Leslie Nielsen. And this is a whole like franchise. Like there were three movies altogether. Three movies altogether, four including this one. There was a TV series and even a video game. So the Naked Gun franchise has had quite a life before this. But yeah, maybe now's the time to get a new one because this movie's a lot of fun. But I'll get into exactly why.
Had that kind of style of comedy gone out of fashion a little bit?
Yeah.
Kind of spoof movie?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I feel like it was kind of taken over by like kind of the scary movie films, and the Wayans brothers did a lot in that kind of genre. Like I'm remembering like Epic Movie and like the different like superhero spoofs and stuff like that, and they gradually kind of turned more and more to like direct to video or direct to streaming release. So that can't exactly be a good sign. But yeah, we haven't seen a lot of this kind of broad slapstick style comedy in a while, but it just seems to have kind of struck the right note with people because the film is getting like really, really good reviews. And honestly, having seen it, I think it kind of deserves them. Yeah,
there is talks of a bit of romance around this film as well.
There is, yes, between Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. I mean, like, look, nothing's been like officially confirmed. I think that they're basing it off the fact that Liam Neeson said something last year about like having fallen in love with Pamela Anderson on set. But I mean, like, you know, he didn't mean
an acting kind of way.
Exactly. Yeah. And now the latest is that a source have told people that they are indeed a couple. But it's like, who exactly is this source? So yeah, they've even been kind of directly asked in an interview, "Are you guys an item?" And Pamela Anderson like kind of brushed it off, saying, "It's you know, this isn't even a question," and he was saying, you know, like just kind of leave it be. And
that's what you would say.
Yeah,
there's no win here. Yeah. You know, the more you deny it.
I mean, hopefully it is a thing because I think they'd be so cute together, but we don't exactly know.
We are so, I don't know what it is about this, but I am so invested, and I really want them to get together. There's a meme going around of Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson, and underneath it is Meryl Streep and Martin Short, and going under it, it's going, we just want these widows to have a great romance again, you know, both at Martin and, was Martin widowed or was he divorced?
He was widowed, yeah.
So there you go. And Liam Neeson was widowed as well. Yeah. And I just, people have been saying though, that is this just for publicity? Because that's what they did with.
They look good together.
Sweeney, what's her name? Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell. Remember when they were on their promo tour, and then at the end of it, it was like, no, we were just playing characters. But I love seeing them together. And do you know what? They just both look so happy.
They do.
And that's all we want.
That's all we want.
Yeah. Liam.
Hilarious. We haven't even got to the film yet. And the other one is in Foreign, isn't it? It's your second
film.
Yeah,
so Late Shift. This is...
You're going to have to read, Tom.
Yes. Don't, what was it Bong Joon-ho said, like, don't be put off by the, you know, 1-inch barrier or 2-inch barrier or whatever he said of subtitles. You know, there are some great, like, foreign language movies out there, and Late Shift is really brilliant. And I think the reason why it's going to strike a chord with, well, audiences globally, but I think particularly with Irish audiences, even though it's set in Switzerland, is it's really about, you know, kind of the health industry crisis and the overworked nurses that are just like doing their absolute all to kind of keep, you know, people well and keep kind of hospitals running. So I think that it'll strike a chord with a lot of people, and also a very good movie. It's a very strong week for films this week.
Right. So to make a really dramatic film about a nurse's life, you just have to show a day in a nurse's life. That's
basically
the point.
Yeah, because the whole film is just set in a day, and I'll get into it later on. But the lead actress is absolutely phenomenal in it, and we meet some characters who will really break your heart, you know. But it's a great, great film, and Serena will be delighted about this. They're both 90 minute long movies.
That is an art that has been lost in Hollywood, in filmmaking altogether. People think that, you know, if people are going to pay, they want over 2 hours. No, we don't. We want something concise, something that keeps us entertained. And I have to say, with subtitles, we are so, our brains are so all over the place now. At least I find if I'm watching something with subtitles, I'm not looking at my phone. It's the only place where I'm really, unless I'm in a cinema or in front of my TV with subtitles, I'm not scrolling. I'm just really invested in what's on the screen.
Great. We're watching a lot of stuff with subtitles
now. What are
you watching? Our kids watch stuff with subtitles. So they're just on. You have to switch them off. That's the thing now.
Yeah.
You take over the TV from your kids. You
switch. Oh, you mean even English subtitles?
Yeah, just they've put subtitles on everything because that's just what they do. So if you're asking what I'm watching Bookish. Have you heard Bookish?
That's been coming up a lot.
Oh, yes. It's one of the guys from League of Gentlemen.
Yeah.
The guy who, This Coal Won't Wash Itself, that one. And if you've watched League of Gentlemen, you know that line, otherwise you won't. But his name is Book, and he sells books, but obviously that's not all he does. He's also a kind of an amateur sleuth. But you can tell his backstory is going to be absolutely fascinating. It's set at the end of World War II, and they you know, stumble into an old graveyard and where these bodies here before. It's just brilliant from the word go. Bookish. It's on one of those word stations.
The best subtitles ever are on the television program The Wire, because they're speaking in real urban American accents. And I was watching it and I was saying, I think I understand most of what they're saying. So I turned on the subtitles and started following it. I was saying, oh, this is much better. And then I started watching the specials on the DVD. And then they started explaining the things that I didn't explain. So they were speaking in English with English subtitles. And I still needed to refer to things to work out what they were talking about.
Just before we go to your first story from the world of showbiz, there's great worry around Naked Gun. Listeners saying, I must say I'm very worried about the new Naked Gun. I adored Police Squad, and it's kind of been going downhill since then, in my opinion. I like the early stuff. So, yeah, I hear you. I like the early stuff too. All of the best movies in the last few years have been foreign language films. Anatomy of a Fall, All Quiet on the Western Front, Parasite, etc. Hollywood is dying because they're too busy making superhero remakes, which ties us in nicely to the continued death of Hollywood, which is the growth of Netflix and its star, Adam Sandler, isn't it?
Yeah, well, look, it's not necessarily the death. I think places like streamers are what started taking chances again, okay? Now, they're starting to get a bit complacent too, but do you remember for a long time, we didn't have any rom-coms out there, and it was Netflix who was just giving big bucks to the stars, going, go off and make a 90-minute, do you hear that, 90-minute rom-com? And other streamers have followed suit. But what that also has meant is that less and less people are going to the cinema, and what is making money in the cinema are the big blockbusters, right? So it's event cinema. But Netflix, we knew that Adam Sandler had great clout with Netflix and that he was a great success. But, well, Happy Gilmore 2, a lot of people were cynical about it. It's got mixed reviews. It's one definitely for the fans. It didn't deserve the mixed reviews because it actually amassed 46.7 million views in its first 3 days. So this wasn't just the best opening ever for an Adam Sandler Netflix film, but it was also the biggest US opening for a Netflix film, full stop.
Right.
So,
and it's kind of the culmination of a long road, isn't it? Because he was one of the first big Hollywood stars to go to Netflix.
Yeah.
And start signing contracts with them.
Big contracts. And also, it's like his movies really are critic proof. And last week I asked, could I have a, usually we get previews of these things so we can watch them and we can review them. Adam Sandler films, there are no previews. And I don't blame him because these films are meant for the fans and the fans only. And he just keeps producing and keeps getting the views. I mean, it wasn't just Happy Gilmore 2 that was in the top 10. In the top 10 also was Hotel Transylvania, Summer Vacation, the original Happy Gilmore. So it's like he brings them in with this and then they come back for his back catalogue, which he has a huge back catalogue. And we need to laugh. He's making us laugh.
Yeah, totally. Has he signed a new contract at Netflix, did I hear?
Has he signed a new contract? He's still, I do know.
I think he has, $275 million for 3 years.
Wow.
Exactly.
Well, do you know what? The next film he's making, I'm actually looking forward to. It's not the usual Adam Sandler. It's more the Gemstones. What was the... it's called Jay Kelly. So it stars George Uncut Clooney. Gems. Gemstones. George Clooney is in this and it's a dramedy. And this is actually, there's a lot of awards buzz. So Adam Sandler can do both. He can give you the funny, but he can also do I'm serious and can give you the drama. So I'm looking forward to that.
Phenomenal. And the film itself, the cast in it seems to be off the clock, including loads of people who are not actors, including Rory McIlroy.
Rory McIlroy makes an appearance. Like the cameo list is off the charts. We've got Travis Kelce. I had to do a double take and go, is that really Travis Kelce on there? There's Travis Kelce. There's Post Malone, Guy Fieri, the chef. There's also, I'm really sorry, there's a lot of golfers that I don't know and a lot of golf commentators too.
Scotty,
I know Rory.
Scotty Scheffler, who is very famous and apparently is a very good actor as well. What people are saying, he was great in this.
Yeah, he was all right.
All right, fair enough. The people I knew thought he was great were golfers.
They were fanboying.
Yeah, maybe that might explain a great deal. But also, I have heard good reviews. Did you enjoy it?
I really enjoyed it. I watched it, and it's probably not for him, but I watched it with my 9-year-old. And as soon as we watched it, he was like, can we go back and watch the original now, Mum? And then can we watch the sequel again together as a family? It's just, you know what? It's just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
It pays great homage to the original, but it also does has some new stuff. And it's just giving you exactly what you want as a fan. And sometimes you just want to turn the TV off and just laugh for 2 hours.
Totally.
Turn on, not off.
Yeah. 100%. And Happy Gilmore 1, that was Universal Movies, wasn't it, 20 years ago? And this isn't. It just shows you how that the filmmaking world has just been decimated, really, and brought to this universe.
I don't know if I'd say decimated. I would say it's changed.
Yeah.
And at least what's happened is it's made movies accessible to more people, but streaming isn't just about doing stuff on the streamers. Like Apple just released Formula One. That will be coming to F1. That will be coming to Apple, but they're also putting it in cinemas. So I think we're getting a bit of the best of both worlds.
Right. Very good. I think we might be good to take a break and then come back with our beer. That sounds like a good idea for everyone. Yes, indeed. There's nobody complaining about that. Let's do it.
I think someone murdered my brother.
Please, take his chair.
Thank you.
I'll find them. This is what I do.
Says you served 20 years for man's laughter.
You mean manslaughter?
Must have been quite the joke.
They're going to shut down police squad if you do not solve this case.
Do this by the book.
Show a little respect!
Why?
Who's going to arrest me?
Other cops?
Yes.
Is she serious?
Is he serious?
He's no.
Well, there you go. No prize for guessing. That's a clip from Naked Gun 2. It sounds great.
Yeah.
Even little bits. So the jokes are so obvious. We all know that the chair was pulled out of the way when take a chair. You didn't need to see it to know that. But they still seem great.
It really kind of works. So the Naked Gun, it's just full of that broad slapstick, satirical kind of humor. There are some very bold jokes in this, I have to say. Like, you get a sneak peek at, Liam Neeson down there. And in fact, there are lots of kind of balls jokes, basically, that follow. I was just watching this, like, I've never seen a film with as many jokes about male anatomy. But it's silly. It's fun. Some of the jokes are just plain random, to be honest. And yeah, it is that kind of like stupid humor. Like, you see when you're walking through the police station at one point, you pass by the cold cases. They're being kept in a freezer. There are little girls who are being arrested for of their lemonade stand. Like, this stuff is absolutely like bonkers, ridiculous, but somehow it just kind of works. And I think that, like, what I really appreciate about it is that even the jokes that don't land, they move on so quickly and they just keep throwing joke after joke after joke at you that you find yourself kind of laughing along in spite of yourself, you know, and you do warm up to it really quickly. It is like really kind of warmly directed. The cast are absolutely fantastic. Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson share absolutely terrific chemistry in it. They're really natural comics. It's just a lot of fun. It shouldn't work as well as it does, but it just does.
I can tell just from your body language and your feeling that you loved it.
Yeah, yes. I really did. I haven't laughed this hard at a movie, I don't think, all year. Oh, this really? And maybe Companion. But Companion is a different type of humour. It's kind of like it's sharper, you know. This is just stupid, you know. And you're kind of, you almost feel like a bit guilty or embarrassed at yourself for laughing at it. And yet it's just so, you're completely won over and charmed by it, you know. And I heard other people in the cinema laughing, so I'm not going to feel bad about myself. Yeah, it's just fun.
It's probably no point in asking, is there a plot? Was there ever
there's
a plot?
A bit of a plot to it. So Lieutenant Frank Drebin Jr., who's played by Liam Neeson, he has proven himself somewhat belligerent, which isn't like any leading cop in a movie at all. But anyway, he gets moved to Collisions by Chief Davis, who's played in the movie by C.C.H. Pounder. So he's investigating what looks like a simple kind of car accident, but then it turns out it could actually be a murder case. And as you would have heard in the clip there, the victim's sister, Beth Davenport, turns up and she's like, I'm suspicious of everything that's happened there. So she teams up with Frank and they start doing a bit of investigating, you know. That's not exactly official.
See where it goes to from there. Have you any idea on the writers? Because I can't help but think that this type of comedy on TV has really blossomed. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I don't know if you've ever seen. We watched that.
Well, I know there's kind of a team of writers behind it, which I feel like with comedies sometimes works really well and sometimes doesn't, but obviously it worked for this. One of the credits I did find that was really interesting for this is Akiva Schaffer. He's the director of it, and his past credits actually include Saturday Night Live, the Lego Movie. He would have worked on that, and he actually did work on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as it happens, in Lonely Island. And I think so. There you go. So I think there is that. He's used to that kind of style of humor, kind of the broad slapstick, like quite like silly humor, but sometimes it just works, particularly when you have the right actors, you know, delivering it. And Liam Neeson has spoken about how when he was cast in this as this character, he wanted to play it completely straight, which is exactly what Leslie Nielsen like did in the original, and he did so brilliantly in the likes of Airplane, which then led him on to, you know, be kind of the lead of the Naked Gun franchise. And I mean, Neeson just has such a dominant, immediate presence no matter what he does, and as Frank, he just alternates perfectly between being completely brilliant and a total idiot, and it just works, even though, like, character consistency wise, you know, for dramatic purposes, it wouldn't really make sense, but it just works. And like I said, because it's that kind of tight 90 minutes, I think a lot of comedies suffer from going for like that kind of hour, 50 minute running length. I feel like a lot of them are just too long now, but this one doesn't overstay its welcome. It's just good, silly fun. You know, I know that some cynical people might go into it and just like sit there kind of grumpy, but just let yourself be a bit silly, you know, let yourself laugh at the dumb jokes.
Pretend you're in the back of the van going to a gig somewhere. He kind of did comedy a little bit when he started doing impersonations of himself, remember? The online ones for Taken, where, you know, I will find you.
Yeah,
I have a particular set of skills.
Yeah.
For children's ads.
Yeah,
they were brilliant.
And he would have started kind of doing a bit of comedy. Like, I know he did some sketch with Ricky Gervais. I forget which show it was fun, but it's really funny if you look it up on YouTube. But it's Liam Neeson trying out comedy and he's like auditioning it for Ricky Gervais. Now, it's a really, really bold sketch, but it's very funny. And then he would have started like exploring comedy with the likes of, you know, Seth MacFarlane. I think he did a bit of Family Guy. I know that he did that, whatchamacallit, Western comedy, 100 Ways to Die in the West, which I know is kind of hit and miss. But so this is by no means his first attempt at comedy. And I think he'd had kind of just enough experience in it to take on a franchise like The Naked Gun. Because, I mean, Leslie Nielsen did make it absolutely iconic, you know?
He only had to sit there. You just, you know, you, every really single person can see the boy coming to him in the cockpit, you know? And think, it's the last thing. Don't ask him a question.
If you're a fan of the original, there are like little like nods to it that you do get kind of a kick out of. Like, they didn't say anything referring to it, but I did notice a stuffed beaver in the back of one of the scenes, and I was like, I know exactly what that's a reference to. I just thought it was brilliant. So there are like fun little moments like that you've kind of come to expect of these legacy sequels, as we now kind of refer to them, you know.
People remembering best bits of favourite of old Naked Guns. A baddie points the gun at Frank Drebin and says, any last requests, Drebin? And Frank says, can I have the gun?
Brilliant. Oh, so good.
One of the best tricks, Anna Nicole Smith asking, is this some kind of bust? To which Drebin says, yes, it's very impressive. Maybe this is the kind of humour we've just been missing in our lives.
And maybe, like, you kind of say, there's so much going on in the world, but like, it is just like fun and escapist. And you go to the cinema for 90 minutes and you just laugh. I'm just like, honestly, there are so many not funny comedies out there. Like, I'm always like kind of shocked at like just the like average stuff that is churned out. And I mean, I'm talking about stuff that makes it to cinemas, stuff that makes it to streaming, etc. Like, when you get a comedy that really does just make you laugh out loud in the cinema, like that deserves to be praised.
This will be gold dust to the studio too, won't it? Because you're going to be talking about IP and following up, getting a franchise. Mm-hmm. If this works, if they're good in this, we're probably going to see 3 or 4 more of these, won't we? Really,
we could. Yeah, we could. And by then, Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson will officially confirm.
What is she like, by the way? Because it's a new chapter for her as well, isn't it? She's kind of reinvented herself now as the no makeup Pamela facing into the world.
Yeah, she's really doing terrific. I think, I can't remember the name of, was it The Last Showgirl or something, a movie that she did recently that she was great in. She would have done her, documentary series and everything. So yeah, it's great seeing her make a comeback. And yeah, I mean, she's just got it, you know. She's so naturally, she's so like glamorous in this, and she is very funny as well. There's a great sequence in which the two characters are in a cabin lock house, and just where the story goes, it involves a snowman. I think that's enough kind of details to give you, but it's just so bizarre. It's so funny. I don't think that's giving away, because there is a shot of the snowman in the trailer, in fairness, it's very good. I hope I've teased you enough to, and the trailers don't do it justice, by the way.
Can you also mention, get people to stay for the credits, because Tom will appreciate this.
Oh yes.
Really don't want to give too much away.
They're singing. Liam sings.
Yes.
And you just sit there going, please serenade me for as long as you like. He's a fabulous voice. Yeah.
He does a version of Coney Island. You know, the Van Morrison song?
Yeah.
He does a version that's very, very, very good. Yeah. Nothing funny about it at all. It's brilliant. Just sat at the cinema watching Naked Gun and it was brilliant.
There you go.
Sensational. I think we're ready for a beer now.
We are. Liam Neeson is my wife's celebrity crush, which gives me a license to Pamela Anderson as my celebrity crush. So I've been waiting for years, you know, 20 years later.
Perfect. For the four of you.
So, right, first beer is Zuber. So it's 6% amber lager. So it's in the style of a Vienna lager. That's a style of lager that you don't see a lot of in Ireland. Every now and then there's been a couple of imported craft beers that are Vienna lagers. What it is with a Vienna lager, you've got a little bit more malt character to it. It's a little bit darker, kind of amber in colour, as opposed to the kind of classic straw gold that you'd associate with lagers. And with that, what you've got is a kind of a little bit sweeter. It's still very well balanced. There's kind of a very understated bitterness in it, but nice honey, wheat cracker, fresh grass type of aromas and flavour, and then a little bit of kind of apricot peach jam type flavour to it. A little bit of white pepper spice in the finish.
I didn't get any of that, Dean. I won't lie now. Okay. As the only other person actually tasting the beer in the studio with you, all I can say is that it tastes like the nectar of the gods.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing in terms of the way that we taste things, because most people will put everything together into one object.
Yeah.
So they'll taste it and think. Serena is very good at this because every time she tastes a beer, she describes it as beer.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which beer I give her, she always describes, and she's 100% right all of the time. We find it a little bit easier to pick up sweetness and bitterness because they're on the palate. On the aroma, it can be a bit tricky to deconstruct things. And
I'm not doing much deconstruction here.
Yeah,
I find with beer, it's the most rewarding. I don't know if I've done a load of work or whatever, and I'm looking forward to just that moment when it's finished. It's an ice cold beer that I'm most looking forward to, and when I have one, it's like fantastic, and that is fantastic.
It is a nice beer. It disguises the 6% ABV very, very well.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that.
Very easy to drink. Yeah, now I'm going to pretend that I have the physique to be the type of person to read a running magazine. But I was in Eason's and I saw a running magazine, and it had a little thing on the cover saying beer and running. So I said, well, I need to pick this up. So I bought one and only running magazine in my life and read about it.
What did it say?
It said that I was expecting it to be very critical of beer, but basically what it was saying was, if you run and if you have as your reward for completing a run, having a beer, that the benefit that you get from the run will be 100 times anything that the beer could possibly do to you that might be negative. So it was kind of basically saying that if you're using a beer as
We can't stand with or against that, or who knows, that's probably,
more pro-running than
pro-. May not be true. Watch this space. May not be true. Probably not true, actually, now that I think about it. Pamela was always a wonderful person, says the listener. Came to Dublin in 2006 and gave 20,000 to the Open Heart House in AIDS charity. Would be nice, everybody, to hear. I think it's really absolutely delicious beer. You're sniffing it. Are you able to throw anything in there at all?
I've always wondered, do you have to train your taste buds to like beer? Because even I'm a celiac, that's why I'm not drinking this. But even when I could drink beer, my taste buds just reacted to it like bleh.
Yeah, what you're saying makes sense in reverse. What is happening there is that you have an association with beer. You have celiac disease, so an allergy to gluten, which means that you'll react to beer because most beers, there are gluten-free beers, but most beers contain gluten. But effectively, the flavour of beer then is triggering. You will associate it with a negative experience.
Now, this was before I was diagnosed as a celiac.
Okay.
It's the taste is too bitter.
Yeah. It sounds like you didn't get a chance to put the work in.
I didn't have those nights on the
road. Before you became a celiac, you just didn't make space in your life.
We're genetically programmed to react negatively to bitter. With bitter and sour, what it is that a lot of poisons are bitter. So if you taste something and it's bitter, your brain says, be careful, this could be a poison. And if you taste something that's sour, it usually signifies that something has spoiled.
So the two of you chose to ignore that part of your brain and continue.
I wouldn't say ignore it. I'd say work against it.
We felt intellectually that we wanted to
it's like the first time you get up on a bike and you fall off. You don't let that stop you.
No.
You know, one day I will master this. So put the work in.
It's dedication.
And here we are. There was a message on my screen from my producer before I went to talking to you that said, beer when you can. That could be a t-shirt. Now, on to the tribulations, the trials and tribulations of one of our most famous actors, Neil McDonough. Very famous in Yellowstone at the moment, but he's also a book in Band of Brothers and loads of serious films. But he's saying he was kind of blacklisted in a strange way.
Yeah, it's really funny. You mentioned all those like highly intellectual stuff. I know him from Desperate Housewives. That's where I know him from. Basically, when he got married, he decided that he was no longer going to partake in any acting that involved kissing, right? So he had his wife and then he had his kids and he was just like, I just can't. I can't be kissing another woman. And so Hollywood just went, well, if you're not going to do that, well, then we can't use you anymore. And I sort of understand because when you commit to acting, if you have to play a person who's in a romantic comedy, I'm not going to cast you if you are not going to touch your co-star. So that's why he decided, you know what, this isn't working for me. He did take a real hit to his ego as well.
hit in his career?
Yeah,
though.
He did. Really? Yeah, yeah. Well, because he's closing himself off from a lot of stuff. And he was seen as, you know, he was in Desperate Housewives, stuff like that. And so he was seen in maybe not the romantic lead, but in stories where he played a character who had a partner. And if, as I said, if you're not going to kiss your partner, well, yeah, then it's not going to be that believable.
Because they do chemistry tests and everything to make sure these two people are believable.
Exactly. So he took a hit. But then it sort of worked to his benefit because he turned around and went, well, fine, if they're not going to use me in that way, I'm going to be the baddest villain you've ever seen. And lately, that's what he's doing. You watch Yellowstone?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's excellent in Yellowstone.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent villain.
So that has worked to his benefit. Right. So
it does beg the question, is there more to a screen kiss than actors let on?
I'd say you're for some
cast,
people...
If you're cast opposite Pamela, say, and it says to you, and there's a scene where you have to kiss her, are you secretly going, high-fiving yourself? Go, oh, I yes, at last. I'm being paid for this as well, am I?
Is that the truth?
I'd say some of it would. Sometimes it's hard for the emotion not to cross over. I mean, the most famous case was Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie when he was married to Jennifer Aniston. So, look, I think they can just do the role and it's just acting and whatever. But for others, they don't. And, you know, fair play to him. He decided to make this decision. I don't think he can sort of be up. It's like saying, I want to be a writer, but I will not be typing and I will not be using pen and paper.
Yeah.
So then how are you going to write, you know? So I can understand where both of them are coming from, but this has worked to his benefit. He's now gone on and created a career of villains where he doesn't have to kiss anyone, just kill people.
Yeah, very good. I can't help but think dogs there, they'd be saying, well, your tail is wagging. You're acting like you're not enjoying this, but your tail is wagging.
You know? So, your analogy,
you are. I know you bloody are. You're not getting away, I think. We're moving towards our second film, which is in foreign, so it may be quite a small clip from that. Our second beer, which is the, is that the Polish one that's the most?
Zupa is the number one Polish beer, and then Lech is a premium Polish lager in the style of a German Helles.
Brilliant. And we're also going to get the debate going on who will be the next James Bond, aren't we?
Restarting it.
Yeah. We'll see how we go.
All right, we'll see. We'll see. The jury is out. We'll have a break and back after this. Now, moving on to the second film, we are going to play a clip. George Byrne used to always refuse to play clips from movies if they were in foreign, as he said. But you'll get a flavour of the film from this.
Eine Schlauch im Hals?
Oh. Ist gut. Wenn was ist, klingen Sie, ja?
Ich bin ganz allein. Meine Familie in Burkina Faso, ich habe keine Freunde.
Sie haben mich.
Oh, merci.
You can sense this drama going on.
Yes.
And that's really all.
Tension
is really, isn't that all you need to know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But it's the story of a nurse, is it?
Yeah, so it's a surgical nurse in Switzerland. She's serving a late shift in an understaffed and almost full hospital ward. She's trying to attend to a variety of patients, kind of saying to one, like, I'll be back with you in a minute. She's like wheeling people off to OR, trying to administer painkillers, just going through kind of the daily routine, but she's being pulled in one direction and then the next, and she's just trying to keep everything afloat. Like, she's literally the only nurse working on this ward, which is just pretty crazy. And we're pretty much following her for her entire shift. You know, we see her go through like these little routines, like, you know, preparing different drips and medications, wiping down surfaces and stuff like that. And we also meet the variety of patients that she's attending to. So there are some there that are kind of making her life a little more difficult than perhaps is necessary. Like, there's this high maintenance private patient who wants a very particular type of tea, and it's like, this is not the timing for that. There's a businessman who just won't get off the phone. Like, he is literally being wheeled into the OR and she's like, get off the phone. And then you've got his wife who's asking for a private room even though they don't, you know, have insurance. At one point she gets a call from someone, and I'm like, how do these people get her number, asking about the reading glasses her mother left in her room. Oh, wow. And it's like, this is not the time or place. But yeah, there are a lot of kind of older people in the ward. There are a lot of cancer diagnoses, and there's just like a variety of patients. Like, there's this poor elderly man who's been waiting all day long to find out his diagnosis, and the doctor is like literally like running out the door, and the nurse is just trying to get an answer for this poor man. And there's a critically ill mother. You know, she's kind of surrounded by all her kids, and she's, you know, she's lost all her hair and stuff like that. Like, it's really kind of sad. There's an injured man man who's being cared for by his adult daughter. And it's funny, it's surreal, even like the kind of more fussy and difficult patients, your heart does go out to them as well as your heart going out for the poor nurse, because the situation just sucks for everyone. And there's just not enough kind of help there. There's not enough support there. And there is something that's kind of quite bittersweet about it. There are those really kind of lovely moments where you see glimpses of humanity, which really keeps you going. But it's just generally a very tense and moving watch that, like I said, I think it's going to make people like reflect a lot. A very powerful movie that's going to really strike a chord. And even at the end of the film, it kind of has this closing title that talks about the shortage of nurses in Switzerland. But apparently, according to The Who, by 2030, it's estimated that there'll be a shortage of 13 million nurses around the globe. So this is an issue that really, really needs to be addressed. And, you know, the power of cinema is sometimes one of the means by which we get that message across. So I think Late Shift is a really kind of significant film that should be watched by everyone. Like I said, it is only 90 minutes and it's very moving, very touching.
Okay. There isn't really a traditional story arc to it though, is there?
Not really. It's just, like I said, we basically just follow this nurse across like one shift. And obviously, you know, it's not like kind of in real time. The time has been compressed because it's like 90 minutes. And even we see like her kind of leaving as the people who are on the overnight shift come in and stuff like that. So it's just quite a like simple story, but just very well told.
Sounds great. Yeah. Is that in cinemas now or is that?
So this has more of a limited release. I know for sure it's showing in the Irish Film Institute, but you may have to seek this one out a bit. Sure. Whereas The Naked Gun, that'll be on general release.
Okay, great. We're moving into our second beer, Dane, I believe. Yes, and we're in a different country, isn't it?
We're both in Poland. Here,
okay,
so
great.
Yeah, we're sticking with Poland for both beers. But this is a beer that would be brewed to the German Helles style.
Okay.
So the two most kind of well-known styles of beer from the German and Czech Republic region would be Pilsner and Helles. And the Helles is the slightly more malty one. So again, classic German Helles style beer, wheat crust, herbal character, fresh cut grass type aromas, and really clean, refreshing. 4.8%, which is about normal for the German Helles. It would be a little bit above average for Irish beers. Most of the mainstream Irish beers are about 4.3%. But we've got a barley belt that goes across Europe. So basically, barley is the grain that's most used in brewing beer. And the type of weather that you need for growing barley is pretty much Irish weather. It's kind
okay.
of, you know, not too hot and fairly wet. And as you go kind of across Europe, Ireland, England, Belgium, north of Germany, and then right through Poland, that's your barley belt. So you've got a kind of really solid brewing culture all across that. And this is a reflection
Very
of
good.
That.
I'm surprised, because the other one you were saying was 6% and this is 4.8. You wouldn't notice the 6% in the other one.
No, the 6%.
And I have to say, the other one is just really good. Yeah. This is a lovely beer.
Yeah.
The other one's knockout.
Yeah.
Absolutely knockout. Yeah. And you had a smell of it, Serena, and you think it smells like beer, I believe.
It smells like beer.
There we go. 100%, 100% positive on that. You can't ask for more.
Yeah. She's spot on.
Do you know what that smell reminds me of, though? An Australian summer. Because growing up, you know, we'd have the barbecues and you'd get the beer out of the fridge for the adults in the room. And it just reminds you of, so while I may not be a fan of beer, that smell takes me back to such a nice time in my childhood. I wasn't drinking it, obviously.
It's taking me back to a happy time right now. So we were talking about James Bond.
Yes.
And that AGM, isn't it? Or Amazon MGM have acquired.
Yep.
Controversially, some would think.
Yeah.
The Bond kind of whole.
What I will say, though, about Amazon MGM Studios is that they are not rushing. They are taking their time and they've done it the right way. So they haven't gone, here's our star. What they've done is, here's our producers. Here's everyone behind the scenes. Denis Villeneuve has been brought on to direct. They have now announced the writer, and the writer is Stephen Knight. He is the writer behind Peaky Blinders.
Right.
He's also, here's a little tidbit for you that I didn't know. He's one of the co-creators of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Is he really?
Like, what a great series. But he's done so much more than that. So they're not talking about the leads, though, because they're like, do you know what? Denis has to go off and do Dune Part 3. I cannot believe there's going to be a Part 3. But anyway, he's off doing that. While he's doing that, Knight is going to write the script.
Okay.
And not until the script is written, then they will decide on a James Bond. And I think, you know, if people are worried about this being out of the broccoli's hands, I think they're doing all the right things so far.
Sure.
They're taking their time. They are not rushing into trying just get out a new Bond for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Because they have to do it properly.
They have to get it right. And they have to particularly get the first film right. Yeah. That's huge.
So who do you think should be James
Bond? Well, you know that Cillian Murphy has worked with Peaky Blinders. I think Cillian Murphy would be a great James Bond.
No.
Why so straight? No.
Because do you know what I think I'd like? I would like someone that we don't know. Someone like catapult a new actor into the stratosphere, and that way he comes with, or she, but it's going to be a he comes with no baggage. And I think that would be nice. And we could have a proper fresh start.
But is star appeal not something that you see just from the word go? Like Michael Fassbender was in the Guinness ad. The moment you saw him, you thought, give him a movie now. He was just that was just.
Well, I mean, Daniel Craig had only really done Layer Cake before the Bond franchise, you know? So I think there's something to kind of, not an unknown. You want someone who's had, like, you know, acting experience and everything. But a new face. That appeals to me too.
That was what they did with Superman, the first one with Christopher Reeve, and then just piled really famous actors around him.
But yeah.
He was virtually unknown.
So you honestly don't think, you're in there in Cillian as well. Those cheekbones look great.
I think he'd be great. And I think Daniel Craig was an unusual choice, but given that they went in a really dark direction with James Bond, he fitted perfectly into it. But Cillian Murphy would bring a very quirky kind of...
I think we've started the Team Cillian movement.
I can't see him wanting to do it. I just don't think
it's
a movie.
It's a vocational role almost, isn't it? You have to be so fit. And
I can see him doing all of that stuff and being committed, but I don't know if he wants to be attached to something like that for so many
being
exactly.
So. Yeah, he does.
And James Bond fame would be a lot.
Yeah.
So listen, we only have a minute or so, but this idea that audiences just want sequels and things that they know, that's really starting to become huge, isn't it?
So today we could have done all the showbiz news on all the sequels, reboots, what did you call it? Legacy sequels. They're all being announced.
How fantastic.
But we've got My Best Friend's Wedding. Celine Song is attached to that. Bend It Like Beckham, a sequel there. There's a possible new Facebook movie coming out as well with Jeremy Strong, Mikey Madison, Jeremy Allen White. So the list goes on and on and on. I need some originality, please.
But that just seems to be where the money is, isn't it? People just want to go, their familiarity, they don't take a risk.
See, I think what it is as well is we're living in a time where the world is so all over the place. Maybe what we are all craving is nostalgia and what we know.
Right. On that note, Serena, thank you very much indeed. Deirdre, thank you. Dean, thank you as well.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.